Hello, everybody. Y'all come on in. Let's get things situated here. We may do something a little different today. I am definitely going to do the normal eating thing that you got your email about. So we're going to stay on topic. That for sure is happening. But I have a podcast I need to record, and it happens to be a topic that I get asked about a lot inside the membership. If we have time, we're going to record a live podcast. But it depends on if we have time. So I'm going to see, I'm just going to play it by ear. I want to see how many questions we have, that kind of thing. I want to make sure we address all the actual questions for what we are here for today. So here's how the call works, especially if you are newer and you just joined us from the first 30 days group. We are doing a Q&A. I normally teach a little bit, but then this is also everybody's opportunity to type into the Q&A box and ask any questions you're having. So if you're stuck on something, you're wondering, like, how does this go? I'm a little confused on this, whatever it is, you get to ask it over in the Q&A. So you're just going to want to type that in there. Anne said, oh boy, my camp swag is on the way to Spain. Just got my email this morning. Yeah, we ship all over the world, the worlds. We are a worldwide organization here. It's amazing to me how many countries we actually have members in these days. It's crazy. Let me get my speaking notes up. I'm running a little behind today. I've got to be real honest. I really wanted to get my workout done early today. I have noticed that since I came home from vacation, and this is very important for all of you when it comes to keeping your weight off, maintaining your weight loss and stuff. I pay attention to a lot of things. So one of the things that I noticed is that since I've been back from vacation, my sleep score has started to go back down again. And when I was on vacation, went to bed at the same time, got up at the same time, but my Oura Ring, Oura, if anybody asks, tracks all these different things. It'll track how long it takes you to get to sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep, light sleep, like all kinds of factors. When I was in Florida, I was getting a lot of deep sleep, but I also was taking a walk first thing in the morning. I wasn't exercising in the afternoon. I was eating earlier in the night and the day. There was like all kinds of things that were happening. And since I've been back, I've gotten into my normal routine, and my sleep score every day has gone back down, down into the I think this morning I was all the way down into the 70s, and I was in the 90s while I was on vacation. And part of it could be like stress, but stress, I don't think that's it for me. So I looked at other factors because in general, since I've been back, like I've just been, working like usual. And I also worked while I was on vacation. One thing I noticed was that I am taking a little bit of an energy drink at like around 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock in the afternoon or in the morning so that I can work out somewhere between like 2 and 3. And I think that that's a big part of it. And then there was like one other thing. We've been eating a little bit later each night. So I kind of got back into my routine where I wake up, do some work, eat breakfast, and then I'll have like a swath of meetings. Can't eat lunch at a normal time. So I'm not eating lunch until 3:30. Eat lunch, and then I'm like, hungry at around 7, 8 o'clock, and I go to sleep like a grandma. I go to sleep literally at 8 or 8:30. And that is like, I think is what's doing it. So the reason why I share all this with you is because I know a lot of you just live and breathe by the scale. And here's what I think is important about the scale number. It is there to show you like the trend of your weight, but it is not a like, it cannot tell you anything about your habits. All it can really do is signal if you need to look at the actions that you're doing for the scale. That's really all it is. Like the reason why I have y'all weigh in is because if the scale is going down like a half a pound to 2 pounds per week, you need to not be celebrating. There's nothing wrong with being excited. Like, oh, good. That's awesome. Another coach friend of mine used to talk about how, like, if you want a normalized relationship with the scale, one of the things that you need to do is realize if you get highly excited by the scale, you will probably also be sorely disappointed by it. So a lot of us, like, we need to be more like this with the scale. It's like, oh, that's great that I lost a little weight. I wonder, like, go immediately into curiosity. Every week that you lose a little, go, I wonder what habits helped me with this week. And go back through and look at, what was I eating this week? What was I doing? When was I going to bed? What were the behavioral changes or differences? Like, what's going on there? When I was losing weight, I did a lot of that. I was always using the scale as a curiosity trigger to look at, okay, the scale's going down. I know what I'm doing this week. I just want to put on repeat. If the scale's going down, you don't need to tweak anything just yet, unless you just want to, unless you want to do things, that's fine. But the problem comes in is, like, we don't use it as a trigger. We get triggered by the scale and we'll be like, the dumb scale. Y'all, if you want to do yourself a rock solid, here's the thing that you can do. Stop treating the scale like it's a person. Stop treating it like it's got feelings and emotions. It can do things to you. The bigger of a monster you're making the scale, the more power you will allow it to have over you. So one of the things that you want to do is always use it. Like, I would never weigh in unless I was willing to take a good look at behaviors for the week. The last 7 to 10 days. Like, what's been going on that creates this number? Like, over the last 7 to 10 days, what have I been doing, not doing? What's going on in, like, is this my period week? Am I gearing up for a period? Was this a higher stress week? Like, figure out those patterns and then clean your language up around the scale. Stop calling it names. It's not a he or a she. It's not a bitch. It's not in control. It's not the devil. It's not, so disappointing. Anytime you have emotion around the scale, that means you have a self-generated story. Because this is what I know. If this pen gave you a number, you wouldn't be like, literally, if your weight was up and you like picked up this pen, you wouldn't be mad at it. Like, we don't look at pens and get mad at them. So the scale is no different than an ink pen, bottle of glass cleaner, a lippy. Like, they can't make you feel anything. They're just there. So always remember that you want to be weighing in, you want to use it as a trigger. And so we look at habits, behaviors, things going on. So, like, if I had a stressful week, I'd be like, oh, I notice on stressful weeks, the scale goes up. I wonder why. In stressful weeks, do I deal with my stress with eating or not? Do I miss meals and then, binge at night or not? And maybe for some of you, if you just have a stressful couple of days and all things are tracking, like, you look at your behaviors, like, I did not have overeats this week. I have been doing my four basics. I've been doing the things. Then we know, oh, when I am stressed and I'm not actively getting extra rest, taking care of my mental health and stuff, my body holds water and the scale will go up 2 to 3 pounds because I'm, like, just mentally stressed. Because that also can happen. But when you are too busy blaming the scale and mad and saying, I'm a fuck up and the scale's a bastard and, I'm doing all the things. And, like, you're just, like, taught, like, spitting out vitriol, like, just saying all or nothing sentences, sweeping. Like, I never, ever, except for one time when I lost 100 pounds, declared I was doing all the things until there was a 6 week period where I had a stall. I've told y'all the story 1,000 times. I really was doing all the things. But do you know how I was doing all the things? It wasn't because I declared it. You know what I did? I audited Corinne to make sure she wasn't a big fat liar. I wanted to make sure I was actually doing all the things. I did a deep dive audit on how I was eating and what I was doing and was I getting enough rest and water. I like really dug in there to figure it out. And what I figured out was during that particular stall is I tried eating a little more. So for all of you, this had nothing to do with today's topic, but I don't think we can talk about the scale near enough. I think it's one of the things that if you do not get your attitude in check about it, it's going to send you into panic. It's going to cause you to have unnecessary suffering as you're losing weight. And that sucks. Because the one thing you do not need while you're losing weight is extra suffering. We are already changing a lot of things. I want you to think about it. You know, weight loss is hard. The way I teach it, not from traditional methods. Traditional methods, the reason why weight loss is hard is you don't get to eat the things you like. You don't get near enough calories. You're having to be hungry all the time. Like you've got to over-exercise. You pretty much have to change your life in order to just lose weight, all those kinds of things. What makes weight loss hard and no BS is we're actually looking at our emotional eating. We're uncovering the reasons why we eat, and then we're having to change how we think. You know, one of the hardest things for women to do in no BS is be nice to themselves. Like, I have coached hundreds of you, and when I get you on the phone and I am trying to get you to respect you and like you and just acknowledge what you're doing well, I get more tears. More pushback in those moments. Most of the time, what I get is someone arguing for their pain, but you just don't know. I'm just not good enough. Here's how I'm failing. Here's all the things that are wrong. Like people will argue with me for the hurt. And then I will point out what they're doing right. I have coached women who are taking care of their mothers, and they're like, you just don't understand. I don't love taking care of my mother in dementia. You just don't understand. I don't like going over there. I get angry when she's not acting like herself. You just don't understand. And I'm like, no, I understand. That's all normal. I understand. You're a great daughter for putting yourself in that position. I understand. It's hard to see your mom like that. No one would look forward to it. And when you look at yourself with compassion, I mean, people will tell me, well, that's going to be really hard for me to do to have compassion. That's what makes our weight loss program so hard. I'm just trying to get you fuckers to like yourself. I'm just trying to get you to see the world through a different lens. It's not so like shrouded in cut glass and, you know, spikes and thorns. That makes a lot of our weight loss hard. So when we are sitting around and we're thinking we need to cut some necessary stuff, unnecessary suffering, that's what we got to be cutting out is like thinking that the scale's in control, beating ourselves up for shit. That's the hardest part of losing weight in no BS. Because so many of you are not used to doing it. And you're so afraid to be good to yourself. You're so afraid that if you're good to yourself, that you wouldn't lose weight because you have mixed up that your eating has been like eating has been the way you've been good to yourself. And here's what I will tell you: eating has been the way you've coped. But it's not been how you've been good to yourself. Being good to yourself would be solving the root cause problems that require you to need so much coping with food in life. And when you start being good to yourself, you start taking away the trigger to need the food so much. I promise all of you, it is the answer to the weight loss. Okay, let me just go through a few questions and then I'll talk about how to be a normal eater because that's not going to take very long. I want to just see how far we get in today. I was thinking and feeling great, losing weight and slowly and steadily. My husband and I have caught some sort of cold virus, not COVID, but my weight has gone up already 5 pounds. Okay, so I am eating different, but not overeating. All right, this is exactly what I've been talking about, Sue. You got sick, there's no reason to be upset. I mean, I just want you to think about it. There's literally no reason to be upset about that. And yet we are. We have decided that this 5 pounds means something. So I have to say, it's tough to watch my weight go up so quickly when it takes so much time to lower my weight. So you're thinking, so how can I outthink this? Here's the problem with your thinking. You think that this 5 pounds is going to take as long as 5 pounds through habit change. You've had a sudden reaction to an illness. So it's like a cold, whatever it is. And your body's natural design is, I should hold water and do what I can. The way the body heals, this is why everyone swells when they get sick. This is why women swell so much right before they have a baby. The way the body handles illness is it swells. It holds water because water is like one of the chemical reactions required in order to boost your immune system, like to, for all the things on the inside, for the gears to work. And we make these erroneous, like, conclusions. You act like you gained 5 pounds of overeating fat, which fat takes longer to lose than anything else on the body. Muscle is fast. That's why if you're on the GLP-1 shots, you better fucking be eating your protein and you better be fucking lifting weights, ladies, or you are going to be losing anything but your what you want. You're going to have a real lean liver. You're going to have really thin muscles. You're going to have spongy bones because, like, it'll be like rats chewing on your bones. And your body will be holding onto the fat, which is what we all see. So, like, if you actually want to, like, for all of you, everybody should be lifting weights. I'm just saying right now, all of you should be lifting some weights, especially the older you get. I lifted this morning. Like, I don't even want to most days, but I am just like, you know what I don't want? I do not want to end up like my grandparents. I do not want my grandmothers, humped backs, busted, like, you know, they needed knee replacements, hip replacements. My grandmother in Alabama has failed so many times. She's now on a walker and can't leave her house. It's like, I don't want to be like that. I just don't. There's, you know, God love them, but like, I'm like at the, like, I don't care. I will be lifting when I'm at 95 fucking years old. So what you need to be thinking about though, is 5 pounds that comes on because you're ill means if it comes on fast, it's going to come off about as equally as fast. The second your body starts feeling better stuff, as long as you're not sitting around eating like a jackass because you're sick, which means, oh me, I'm pitiful. I might as well have, you know, I'm so sick. I'm just going to eat this. Like, as long as you're not doing that shit and you're eating around like, I am sick. My body deserves the nutrients it needs. I'm going to take really good care of it because it's ill. It will be fine. But when we have like this overreaction to this 5 pounds, yeah, you're going to feel like shit. But the way I look at it is like, yeah, you're sick. You should be up 5 pounds. Why are you even weighing to begin with? All right. What are some ways I can do besides eat to soothe myself when life is stressful and challenging? First thing I would do, Joyce, is if you've not listened to Kathy's calls, Kathy Hartman is doing calls monthly on like feeling your feelings, like so you're not overeating. I'd listen to every one of her calls. That would be the very first thing that I would do because she has been teaching things in there. I would also go to the Trusting Your Body course. Inside that course, there are meditations. There is all, like, if y'all don't know, there is a treasure trove of things inside the Trusting Your Body course to help you settle your nerves. It was written originally for our binge eaters, but it really isn't a class for binge eaters, in my opinion. It helps them a lot, but it also helps everyone who turns to food, whether you binge eat or not, because you're at some point you don't know how to self-soothe. So I would listen to Kathy's calls and I would totally go to the binge. We used to be called Binge Better. It's now called Trusting Your Body. I would go and I would take that course and I would look at all the research. It is one of the most jam-packed, resource-filled courses that we have inside the membership. And make sure that when you go to the replace, you just, I think if you, I'm not sure, Betsy, do they just type in Kathy or whatever that, that like, how would they find her feelings classes would be great. For Corinne, when you know you are out of your normal routines and you get hungry at 7 or 8 p.m. when you go to bed at 8:30, do you respond to the hunger with food or use a I 100%, Jane, respond to hunger with food. I don't care if it's 10:30 at night. If I'm actually hungry, if I'm physically hungry, my rule is my body deserves to be fed. My body's not going to ask for food if it's not hungry. Now, I know the difference between mental hunger, actual hunger. Mental hunger is where I'm just thinking about food. And this is what I will say about this for all of you. And this ties in beautifully with the normal eater stuff, which is get really good at understanding when you have mental hunger versus physical hunger. So I know that if I'm just thinking I'm hungry and it's, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning and I don't have a physical cue yet, or it is sometime in the lunch hour, or it's early in the evening, because my body doesn't always give off a physical signal. During the day, my big hunger cue is almost all, except for right now, I didn't get to eat breakfast this morning. And let me tell you, my stomach is officially giving me my hunger cues. Like, we are there. I will hopefully get to eat at 12 o'clock. I got a call right after y'all. I will make it. Here's one thing I always tell myself, hunger's not an emergency. So right now I'm actually hungry. When I am hungry, I start reminding myself, hunger's not an emergency. Here's when you're going to eat. Here's what we'll be eating. So I prime myself when I know I'm going to be delayed so that by the time I get to 12 o'clock, I'm not just like a mousetrap ready to spring on some food. I go ahead and start doing, like if I was in meetings and stuff, I would do the mental rehearsals while it wasn't my turn to talk, to just being like, you're going to be okay. You're just really hungry, but you're going to be okay. We're just going to really eat slow when it's time. Because I know me, I'm liable to gobble it and overeat, right? But I know these things. So I just talk to myself in a very kind, also just like matter of fact way. Like if I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm so hungry. I can't wait to eat. I don't know what I'm going to want. I bet I overeat. If I sit there and think about it anxiously, I go into the meal anxious. If I sit around and think about it neutrally, or like, it's not a big deal, we can handle this. You know, if in the past we've overeat, I know what I need to do in order to handle it differently this time, then I go into it neutrally. I don't go into it like jacked up, like some, you know, crackhead on Mountain Dew. So when I am at night though, I know that if I am hungry, I think I'm hungry at like 8 or 8:30, it's likely mental hunger. Now, when I've not ate dinner because I'm out of routines and I'm thinking I'm hungry at that time, I go ahead and eat and respond with food. Because now I can think like, well, this would typically be mental hunger, but I haven't ate in a while. I am out of my routine. So now I'm like going to tell myself, we're going to err on the side of eating. And we're just going to eat like the smart person that we are. Like, I talk to myself like that. Y'all wonder why it's easy for me to stay in check? It's because when I was losing weight in the early days, I'm talking the first 20, 30 pounds of the 100 I had to lose, I was making myself talk to myself like a normal eater would. A normal eater doesn't sit there when they've missed a meal and do a 3-hour freak out behind the scenes in their brain in a meeting so that when they get home, they're like a raccoon turned loose on a dumpster. That's not what normal eaters do. But I noticed, I was like, huh, I don't think people who like don't stress about food, I think people who are at a normal weight, they don't think like this. And I noticed when I'm thinking like this with stuff, I'm just like cocked and ready to overeat. I'm working myself up. So I got to change that. Like, this is not something novel because Corinne is, you don't get it.
You've had your weight off for a long time.
That is not the case. I am where I am now because of the work I did when I was in your shoes. I was wearing the same shoes. My feet looked like they were biscuits busting out of the can. I know what it's like. And I had to go through the same thing y'all do. When I, like, in these situations, if I'm talking to myself like this, this is probably not going to work. That was the best work I ever did losing weight, is noticing how many times I was in situations, even if you don't clean up the rest of your life, food situations, emotional eat situations, where I was like, I don't think that this thinking is helping me. I was on the freaking hunt. It was like I was in Montana going after big game. I was always on the hunt trying to figure out, where do I have thinking that makes me go closer to eating, overeating, versus helping me make better choices for myself? So I know what mental hunger is. And then I also get really familiar with when I have mouth hunger. So here is how I know this one. Last week, while we were on vacation, on the very first day, we had ordered two cakes because three of us had turned 50 this year. And one kid had graduated from high school and one kid had just graduated from college. So we had a lot to celebrate. Plus, August is my mom's birthday month. It was just like all kinds of things. I was like, I'm going to get two cakes. One's going to be strawberry. One's going to be chocolate. I love strawberry cakes. And it was delicious. I mean, it was such a good cake. And of course, no one was eating it. So we were getting ready to leave. And I looked at Chris and I said, there's like a half a cake left. And it was beautiful and delicious. And I said, I am taking this home. He's like, how are you taking this home? And I was like, I'm figuring it out. Because I want to finish my cake. So I wrap it up. I get it in the suitcase. I get it back to Nashville. It was a little squished, but I didn't need it to look good because it already tasted good. So the first day I have a little cake. I'm like, oh, this is so great. But I had it after dinner. And I was like, oh, it's okay. It's my birthday cake, whatever. The second day, I ended up, this was yesterday. I had, which I'm about half ashamed to admit that I was eating a week old cake, but I don't know what they put in there, but it was still fucking good. Like if it had been shit cake, I would not have wasted my time, but we're still rolling on a good tasting cake. And if y'all don't know Corinne, I have 8 week old fish. I figure that if that wouldn't kill me, week old cake ain't going to. So there's always that, y'all. Then yesterday I was like, I planned it on my 24 hour plan. I was like, I'm going to, for lunch, I am having a piece of cake and I'm having a 20 gram yogurt with it. I'm going to get my protein in, but we're having vanilla Greek yogurt with my cake. So I sit down, have my lunch, whatever. That night, I'm like jacked up. I'm just not used to that much sugar anymore. I don't eat a lot of sweets, but boy, if it's the right sweet, I want it. Jacked up on the sugar, having a hard time going to sleep. This is probably one of the reasons why I'm not sleeping as well too with my Oura Ring, because, you know, my eating patterns or whatever. But I was like, you're having mouth hunger now. That cake being in there is creating mouth hunger. And I put in my planner, I'm so glad that you planned the cake today, but I also know you don't need it anymore. You've had your fun. It could be jacking up your sleep. Like, I just kept thinking, I don't want to get back into the habit of wanting to have something sweet often. I like not craving that. I like the ease of just wanting other foods. And I really sat there and thought about it, because it was not like I was saying to myself, you can't have that. That's bad for you. Like, I don't really feel that way. And I also really trust, I really got to thinking about it. If I miss having strawberry cake this much, there's bakeries everywhere. My sister-in-law is a wonderful cook. I could just have her literally make me some strawberry cupcakes and freeze them. And it really opened up like, huh, maybe I want to have some sweets more in my life. But I don't want it to be where every day I'm trying to figure out how to eat it because it's in my refrigerator. I just like, I really thought, I don't want that part of my life back. I like the part of my life where I have treats when I want them, but most of the time, foods that give me energy, that keep me pooping, that let me sleep well at night, like all of that is so lovely. I just don't want to lose that. And so I say all this because you kind of have to just look at what's mental hunger, what's mouth hunger, what's physical hunger. And it just is a process of getting to know yourself. And I think that is what scares y'all sometimes, is that if I take time to get to know myself, it's going to take a long time to lose weight. And I'm going to tell you, the more you know yourself, the faster you're going to lose weight. Because the more you know yourself, the more you can fix things that you didn't even know were a problem. The less accidental overeats you have, the less fuck it moments you have. Like all of that starts going away. All right, let's see. I'm probably overthinking this, but I'd love your thoughts. I typically go to bed at 9 and get up at 5. However, often I'm up in the middle of the night for 2 hours. Other times I get up at 4 a.m. but stay in bed until at least 5. Do you subtract those hours from your total sleep time? I'm asking because I wonder if I should sleep earlier and add in buffer. I don't. I really don't. And I'm kind of the same way. Chris is also the same way. We go to bed early, we get up early, and sometimes we're up in the middle of the night. And I have a deal with myself. And this is one of the things, as long as you're in, like Oura Ring was talking about how important light sleep mode is. And a lot of times we think we're awake when we're actually lightly sleeping. It's kind of where you're just laying there. You're trying to go back to sleep and it can take a while, but you're a little in and out. That all counts towards your total sleep bucket. So I don't overthink that. You might want to figure out why you might be waking up, like really study all the different things you could do to prevent middle of the night wakings. I do a couple of things. One, I have something called an Uller so that my bed temperature can be like at 68 degrees because I sleep better that way. I sleep best when my bed is like between 66 and 68 degrees with a comforter on me. A friend of mine uses a weighted blanket. I used to sleep with a weighted blanket, but since I've hit menopause and stuff, I'm too hot at night, like it just too much. So I had to let that go. You can also make sure that if you're waking up and your mind is racing, that means you need to figure out what is it that you're thinking about and do more writing down stuff. A lot of people who wake up in the middle of the night with their mind racing, it's because you're trying to use your brain as a container and it was meant to be a processor. So our brains are not meant to remember a lot of stuff. It's not meant to hold lists, try to remember things and stuff. Your brain literally has less cortisol and adrenaline that will pump through it if you will have lists for things and places where your brain knows it can go find information you need. Otherwise, it thinks it's got to wake you up to remind you of this stuff. So that's another thing you can try. Thank you for saying last week that sometimes your brain may protect you from going crazy with fear and worry by having some weight gain. This happened to me when my husband had cancer and I tracked and was doing the best I could with the four basics, but still gained 18 pounds. I need ideas on how to get my brain to now understand I'm safe and can start to take that weight off again. Well, are you safe is the first question. Like you just need to write down, am I actually safe now? Like if the cancer part is over, now you have to start telling yourself this part's over, or it's over for now, or right now it's okay to let go of the worry for these reasons. This is where we have to like start reassuring ourselves. It's like when Chris had cancer, I had to remind myself on the daily why he was going to be okay, why it was okay not to obsess that he was going to die. All these kinds of things. I mean, I literally wrote about it every day. And I wrote also about how, like, one of the things I did not want to do is spend my life with him in worry. I wanted to spend my life thinking about how great our marriage is. I wanted to spend my life loving him. And when I was worried he was going to die, I couldn't love him at the same time. And I couldn't really enjoy our time together. So I had to make that real clear distinction with myself. I've been in at a plateau or maintenance for 2 months. I'd like to lose more weight, but emotionally, I don't feel like giving up my new food habits that are keeping me in maintenance. How would you coach yourself or a member through this? Then I would just tell myself, like, first I would question, what do you think you have to give up? What do you think you have to change? Very often, it's not the case. Usually, if we're in a maintenance or a plateau, like, a lot of times our brain goes to, here's the things I'm doing I have to give up when there are other things that are happening. So if you look at your data and you ever eat past enough, you sometimes don't wait for hunger, you are breaking your plan, and it's not a spirit of the law swap. Like you're like, I notice that I'm calling it swapping when it's really, I'm justifying and excusing. Like, I wonder why I'm having such a hard time following my plan. Like, what would it take to follow my plan? Any overeats and stuff. A lot of times we forget we need to give that up. Like, we conflate, oh, well, now I got to cut out carbs and stuff. And it's like, well, how about the 3 nights a week that you eat too much dinner? What if we just didn't overeat dinner, but we kept our carbs? You know, sometimes people need to remember that. So, if you want, you can take to ask coaches, Elisa. You can take like all of your data for like take the last week or two and say, here's how many overeats I had. Here's how many food swaps I had. And I swapped this food for that food. Let us take a look at your data, but you need to give us the detailed data. And I will tell all of you what magically happens usually. When you go to collect to get all of your, like, oh, now I'm going to have a coach look at it. So often, when you go and get all of the information, like the number of overeats, even the little ones and stuff, you start seeing, like, that's the problem. It's not that I've got to give up the things that make me happy. I need to give up the things that are standing in my way. So if you have any of those, that's what we got to do first. Okay. All right, let me answer this last one because this one is more for me. I need some bro science. All right. I take a weightlifting class in the evening, get after 9. My trainer says that we should have a protein shake or food after class. I think that's fine. I'm not hungry at the time. Should I have the shake even if I'm not hungry? I'm 44, recovering from a car accident. The goal of the class is heavy lifting. I'm currently back squatting 80 pounds, but most people are lifting much heavier than me. Hey, 80 pounds is nothing to joke about. I'm just going to tell you right now, I think today, whatever, 45, 30. I mean, I was only back squatting 85 pounds today. So don't feel bad. I mean, to me, that's res I'm going to tell you that is respectable because I led off with 85 pound back squats today too. So, Mercedes, you're doing just fine. I've been doing the class for a year and my lifts have not progressed as much as I'd like. So, one thing that you could add in the protein shake, I don't think adding the protein shake in and of itself is probably what's going to make you shoot your weights up. But I will say this, I don't think there's anything wrong with their advice. I don't think there's anything wrong. Like if you're just taking down a protein shake. Now, if you were stopping off and having, cake and ice cream because you had to work out, then we would be talking about it. But sometimes when you are, when y'all are like exercising and lifting weights, especially for me, for about 30 minutes to an hour after I work out, I don't have hardly any appetite. I go hard enough in the workout itself to not want to eat. So like like your body will be pumping, adrenaline and stuff in order for you to work out. Which for some of us, it depresses our appetite. There's also a lot of newer research that shows you do not need to make sure that you have protein right after. But this is what I would say. If you're eating within 2 hours before that workout and you're getting in protein, you probably don't need it after. But I don't think it would hurt either. You could just try it. As far as like getting your lifts up 5 pounds at a time. I track all my workouts on a spreadsheet. If I work out at home, I've got my computer there. If I come home, the first thing I do, I share my spreadsheet with Jane so she can see that she doesn't really critique me, but I share it with her because I do better This is just a hack for all of you who are one of the things we're doing at the Queen of Your Life Camp. So if you're not, if you have not gotten your virtual ticket, please go ahead and get your damn virtual ticket. September 1st, the price goes up again. So make sure you get it. You can go to the website and you can check it out. We are doing so many things. Like basically, all of you are going to set some kind of like goal. And then I'm going to teach y'all while we're there how I achieve goals. Like, what is my thinking that gets me to be disciplined? What is my thinking around commitment? What is my thinking around these things? But I'll give you a dirty hack. I know that if I promise someone something, I will do it. If I think someone's watching me, it will get done. That is like a very common motivational hack for humans. Most humans are worried about what other people think. So to be committed and disciplined, one of the strongest hacks is to figure out a way to be on display. So you tell someone what you are going to do. This is where a lot of you end up like quitting accountability groups. You tell them you're going to do something, you don't. Next thing you know, you just quit and ghost instead of show up and tell them why you didn't do it. Get their advice on how to make it easier, how to baby step in. Commit to showing up no matter what. Like, I say I'm going to do this. I don't do it. Don't ghost them and you. Say, here's what I am committed to doing. I'm committed to trying this. And if I don't, I'm committed to come in here and talk about it. Because for a lot of you, the first step to getting consistent is not going to be doing it right. A lot of you think consistency is like perfect row of check marks. When I ask, like, we're going to talk about consistency too at that weekend, because you got to understand how consistency works. Most of us have a busted definition of consistency. We conflate consistency with perfection. They're not the same thing. Consistency is consistently trying at the level you can try for that day. So that means to be consistent in something, it means I'm doing something about it every day. It's just my abilities might look different on every day. My winning percentage might look different every day. How well I do it might look different every day, but I'm consistently working on it. And that's where many of you are actually failing, is you want to be consistent with planning. And if you don't plan every day, then you think you're not being consistent. And I'm like, but if you every day examine why you didn't the day before and you kind of keep trying to get back in there, that's the consistency. If you notice you didn't plan breakfast because you talked yourself out of it and you're just like, you know what, I probably should have made a plan, and you decide to do it at lunch, or you just write on a sticky note, this is what I'm going to have for dinner 5 minutes before you walk in the door, just so you can say you planned for the day, that teaches your brain everything counts. It's all going to add up. Consistency is about compounded efforts and things that you try. All right, let's talk for a minute about the normal eating. We are on the lessons 5 and 6 inside the No BS new course. So if you notice, we added a whole new set of lessons in module 2. Lessons 5 through 6 is what we're talking about this week. And the lessons are about how to be a normal eater. So the first thing is all of you need to remember are the phases of change when it comes to being a normal eater. That was the very last lesson of module 1. And I was just talking about this with consistency. Most of you forget that the phases of change means your brain has to get on board through like an evolution of time. So when you first introduce a new habit or doing something new, your brain is designed to forget to even cue you to do it 80% of the time. Your brain is designed to forget it. It's not done enough on purpose and made important enough and like triggered to think, oh, this is important enough to even give you better than about 80% of the time, forgetting, noticing after the fact you didn't do it, having a hard time with it, making mistakes with it. Like when you first introduce a new eating pattern, 20% of the time, it'll probably go like gangbusters. And 80% of the time, you have to remind yourself, it's not automatic. You may forget. You might notice after the fact that you didn't do it. And it's important to become a normal eater. Normal eaters don't think that's a problem when they are changing habits with their eating. Normal eaters just know it takes time to get used to it. So every time they forget, they don't go like, I'm so stupid. Something's wrong with me. I must not want it bad enough. They don't say shit like that. They just say like, okay, I need to like, maybe I need a sticky note. Maybe I should set a reminder on my phone. Maybe I should have somebody text me tomorrow to do this. I'll probably remember tomorrow. I'm just getting used to this. They just normalize. I mean, the whole thing about being a normal eater is they just use normal language around things. They're not using awful language around things. Normal eaters are not sitting around beating themselves up over everything. But normal eaters eat a lot like you. Sometimes they overeat. They just don't beat the shit out of themselves and make it such a big deal and a moral failing that they have to keep eating to escape how awful they are to themselves. They just move on. They just say, you know what? That was really good. I ate too much. I don't really love how that feels. Tomorrow, I am for sure going to get in some vegetables. That'll push some of this stuff through. Like normal eaters just think like that. Like if I eat cake on Wednesday and on Thursday someone brings in a cupcake, you know what a normal eater will do? Usually they'll like my normal eating friends, they'll be like, oh, that's so sweet. I had cake yesterday. Thank you though. Not a big deal. Not worrying that they're crushing someone's feelings. They're not sitting there going like, oh my God, I'm never going to get a cupcake ever again. Oh, I'm missing out on my opportunity. They don't do that. So if you are doing that, you have to be like, oh, this is like what Karim was talking about. This is one of those times where I have to notice I'm making this way bigger of a deal than my future self would. So my future self wouldn't freak out over this. She'll either take it and save it for another day. She'll say no thank you and not think that that is some kind of slap in the face or wasting money. She'll say like, no, you know what? Yesterday I had cake. I'm not in the habit of eating it 2 days in a row anymore. Like that's all they do. So the other thing is we need to make sure that when we're in the early stages, it is very critical that you're not just paying attention to what's going wrong, but you've got to really index what's going right. So the times that you remember, the times that it's going great, you need to tell yourself, I'm so proud of you. You're really making some changes. This looks like it's getting easier. Hey, today you did it. Tomorrow, let's try again. Like it's really important that you are giving yourself kudos where kudos are deserved. Because what most of you do is just like, okay, thank God I did that. I hope I did. I don't fuck it up tomorrow. We don't want to do that. That's not going to help you. If you want to talk about making weight loss take forever, then talk to yourself like an asshole all the way. Then we also need to remind ourselves that rebuilding trust with our body, it takes time and it takes patience. Your body is going to regain its hunger cues at some point. That is one, if you're out of touch with them right now, you just need to tell yourself, as long as I'm patient and as long as I'm paying attention, and even if I need to do timed meals right now, like I need to tell myself, these are the times I'm going to eat. And I'm going to serve myself a certain amount in the very beginning. I just want to do that so I can get used to what it feels like in my body when I'm regularly fed. And when I stop, when I think that's enough for my body, so I can readjust from feeling overly full to like, huh, this might be a safe enough now. So for some of you, when you're like, if it literally doesn't feel safe, like you feel your best when you eat way past full. And when I say your best, I don't mean your physical best, but there's like a safety, or it's the only time you really feel satisfied, because most of the time in life, you don't feel very satisfied. You're always on edge, worrying about what people think. You've got a running to-do list that's 5 miles long. You always feel like you're not doing good enough and stuff. For some of you, when all of that's happening, eating past full is the only time the anxiety is not there. You have learned that eating way past full, eating too much full food, helps you not have to experience that life. And so what you want to start with is like trying some of the things of eating just a little bit less than you normally do, so that you can see you might not have to eat as much as you've been eating, while simultaneously examining like what's going on in my life to where I'm staying so jacked up. Make a list of those things where these are the areas of my life outside of food and weight that I am jacked up, where I am worrying, where I am catastrophizing. I'm overanalyzing, I'm perfecting, I'm burning out, I'm overtrying, overworking. Like, look for all those are overparenting, overguilting. Like, look for all your overages. And then you're like, okay, now I can see why there are times when if the only time I'm really getting relief each day is at meals when I eat past enough. Oh, I want to figure out how do I take the temperature down in all of these areas? Because the more I can take the temperature down here, the less I need to feel full to feel safe. And then the other thing that you can do is as you start eating a little bit less, you start getting a little bit more tolerance for some of that anxiety. Because we also have to be like, we're just going to have periods where we are going to, like, nobody's getting through weight loss without ever being stressed, late, or tired, or whatever. That's called life. We have to be able to lose weight through pressing circumstances at times. But the problem that most of us are running into is we have made our entire life a pressing circumstance. You're always like, when this is over, then I'll feel better. If you are always like that, like I am like the queen of this. Jane is always teasing me because I always think I'm like a month away from feeling amazing. It's like when these things are done and when these things are done and when we're not doing this anymore, everything's just going to be so much better, except there's always new stressors coming on. And I've had to really work on, I'm setting myself up to always be like I set myself up for peace and relaxation and stuff to be just out of reach all the time. And many of us run our lives like that. So the solution here is you look at where you're taking on too much, like all these things, and you just take one that you think like, if I worked on this, if I never worried about this person's thoughts ever again, if I could have the balls to quit doing this one thing for this one person, if I would just, you know, didn't do this one thing anymore, a lot would be better. Then take that one thing to ask coaches and say, I really want to work on this one thing because it's causing a lot of stress in my life. And I know that if I solve this, I might do better at like being able to quit relying on food. And somebody asked, are you addressing that at the Queen Camp? We're going to be talking about all the things. Like, you got to like remove the obstacles and stuff. And we're going to be looking for all the obstacles. That's one of the things I'm really good at, is figuring out what's in the way of me and my goals. And usually what's in the way of you and whatever you want most is not a person or a situation. Because here's the thing. If the only thing that's like between you and a goal is getting a certificate in something, then just like make time and go get it done. But usually the what stands between us and the goal is I'm worried what everybody would think if I went after it and it didn't work out. I worry what people would think if I told them I'm going to do this. And then we don't because of that. And that tends to be the biggest blockers between you and your dreams. And then the last thing is for all of you is make sure you're using your No BS assessment. We have the No BS assessment that's really good. It is not the habit tracker. We actually have a full assessment that you can use. It's probably under the resources area in our website. And I think it's the unsung hero of our program. Get it out because it will help you really, like most of you, when you are trying to figure out what's standing between you and stopping at enough or being a normal eater and stuff, you make so many sweeping statements. It's because I'm not doing anything. It's because I'm lazy. It's because I never plan. I never follow my plan and stuff. The No BS assessment asks you questions in a new way so that you can kind of get more to like little bitty things that could be in your way that we can fix and we can change to where it doesn't overwhelm you. That is like a big piece for me inside of No BS. Like, I just want all of you to know when I am creating content and stuff, I have two, like outside of your weight loss, I have like two goals. I always think about this. What do I need to teach them that if they do this, their life gets better? Like I'm always trying, because I know that if your life is better, weight loss is a lot easier. That's why I want you working on your life. Like I always say, set a goal life. Don't set a goal weight. It's not enough to achieve a goal weight. We are here to have a goal life. And so I'm always thinking when we're creating things like, okay, at the heart of it, at the root of it, that makes us different from other weight loss programs is we are going to figure out how you have an amazing life so that the weight is just coming off, the mental and physical. And the second key component I really strive for is, and how do I do this in a way that doesn't overwhelm them? Like, how do I break things down simply? How do we give you like the assessment? How do we give you things that are going to show you what to fix? So you don't have like 1,000 things to fix. We show you how to like dial in and be like, let's adjust this dial this month. And let's see how much weight you can lose by making this one change. Because too often y'all get stuck, not like at some point you get on a stall or plateau. It's just like our question that I answered earlier. I've been on a stall for 2 months. And my biggest fear is I have to give up my new lifestyle to get off my stall. It's like that brain is jumping to the conclusion, I have to give up all of this. When I would bet you, if you use the No BS assessment, there are micro changes that need to be done that once made, not only will you get off your stall, but I bet you feel better too. Not because you're losing weight, because we're going to change something that's going to allow you to have a little bit better of a life to where you don't have to rely on food in some little way that could be keeping you stalled out. And then you just start feeling the benefits of all of it. Okay. We didn't get to the podcast. That's okay though. I'll record it. I'll just record it all on my own. But we got a lot covered today. Oh my gosh, if Betsy didn't get a bajillion quick hits out of this, I will like, I don't know, go outside and put myself in the sewer. There should be some good ones in this one. So y'all have a good one. I will talk to you soon. And again, if you've not registered for Queen of Your Life, we're going to have, this is like, we are not doing another big in-person camp until 2026. That's why you want to get the virtual ticket to this one. We will be doing some just virtual non-swag things next year, but they won't be big 3-day events and stuff. So if you're really wanting that experience, get in on this one now while I scope out what we're going to be doing in 2025 since we can't get hotel space. So we're taking a year off from the in-persons, and then we'll come back in 2026. All right. Y'all have a good one. Bye, y'all. Oh, and no, you cannot get this sweatshirt. My assistant ordered it for me. She just made it herself. Bye, y'all.